Welcome to the Talk Birdie to Me podcast. This is Bird Dog Banner with Emily, and that's me. This is an informal but educational discussion on dog-related topics. We'll cover everything from waterfowl and upland hunting to training tips and even some controversial topics from a dog trainer's perspective. If you like what you hear, please be sure to subscribe and follow me on social media at Short Hairs and Shotguns and also at Horizon Retrievers. Welcome to episode 4 of the Talk Birdie to Me podcast. If you haven't already, please be sure to check out my previous episodes. And if you like those, please do subscribe so that I know someone is appreciating these and that they're worth my time to continue. This episode is going to cover how to select a breeder, and I hope it'll be relevant to everyone looking to buy a puppy. And that goes for even if you want to rescue one or buy an older dog. I'd absolutely recommend giving this a listen just in case any of these points resonate with you. Or maybe you might discover that buying a specific dog from a breeder might be the best fit. But regardless, adding a new dog to the family is a huge decision, and one I would definitely encourage you to not take lightly at all. So do your homework, do your research, avoid any impulsive decision making, and if you have any questions, definitely reach out. I'd be happy to help. So as I mentioned in the previous episode where we discussed puppies, selecting a breeder and then selecting a litter from that breeder and then selecting a puppy from that litter is going to be the single most important decision you can make in order to mold the dog of your dreams. So if you've got something in mind that you really want your dog to do, or you have this idea of what you want your dog to be, finding the right breeder and litter and puppy is the single most important thing you can do in order to make a big step towards that goal. You can make your life significantly easier by putting the work in up front to find a puppy that is going to set you up for success, to be that dog that you are dreaming of and have been bred and has probably been bred for generations and generations to be that dog, versus to try and take a dog that might be more like fitting a square peg in a round hole. It doesn't mean that if you change what your goals are or change your idea of what you want to do, it doesn't mean you can't take that puppy and make it work. But if you want to have the most success in achieving that goal, I would definitely recommend you give this a listen. So I know a lot of you listening are probably experienced dog people, and if that's the case, you're probably not going to get a whole lot out of this podcast. I'm not sure how relevant it will be, but my intention here is to help people who are looking for pets or looking for their first sport dog or working dog or hunting dog, however you want to describe that. So if you're thinking about getting your first companion gun dog, this is the podcast for you. Or if you're thinking about getting a pet, as in you want a German Short Hair Pointer, but you're not going to hunt it, this is still the podcast for you. This is the podcast for anyone who wants some help finding the right puppy. And as an overview, here are some things we're going to cover. So first, we're going to talk about purpose-bred dogs. We're going to talk about testing, titles, performance, and practical application, health testing, temperament, confirmation, ethics, and red flags. So starting off with purpose-bred dogs, when we're looking at breeders, one of the first things we want to ask is, what is their breeding goal? And a lot of times this will be posted on their website, or this is something we can ask them when we call them to talk about their future litters. But what is their breeding goal? Is their breeding goal to produce dogs that fit the breed standard? Is it to produce high quality hunting dogs? Is it to produce dogs that are going to excel in a specific sport, such as NAVDA? Is it to produce dogs that are of a cool color, like silver labs? Is it to produce a certain type of dog, a body type, like a big bulldog or a short wide bulldog? Or is their goal just to breed because they have this dog that they love and they think everyone else will love it too? So what is their purpose in breeding that dog? And that kind of takes us into our second topic here, which is going to be testing, titles, performance, and practical application. This is where most of that purpose is going to come from, especially when we're talking about sport dogs and hunting dogs. This is where we're going to find what dogs are worth breeding. So if you aren't set on a particular breed, which is a good thing because then you can be really flexible and that could certainly pay off for you. But if you aren't set on a particular breed, I would spend time in the areas of what you want to do with a variety of breeds and breeders. So this is, again, geared towards sport people. It's a little bit different if you're just looking for a companion, but if you have this idea that you are going to do NAVDA, spend some time with different breeds that do NAVDA and breeders that do NAVDA and see how you feel. For one, don't base your judgment of one breed off of one breeder. So remember, I'm going to say this every single podcast, there's as much variation within a breed as between them. So just because you don't like one specific Spinoni breeder doesn't mean you're going to hate another Spinoni breeder or whatever. That goes for all breeds. Like, for instance, there are so many lab breeders. I mean, for all sorts of different purposes and not purposes, pet breeders, sport breeders, detection breeders, hunting breeders, lab breeders galore. And there are many, 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 many lab breeders that I would never in a million years buy a puppy from. Not saying because all of those are bad breeders. Some of them definitely are. But some of them just don't produce dogs that I particularly want, like field trial dogs. I'm not going to buy a puppy from a field trial lab breeder because I don't want to do field trials. But that doesn't mean I don't like labs. I will forever like labs and own labs and buy labs, but it's going to be from a very particular type of breeder. So just because you don't like the dogs you see from one breeder, that doesn't mean you're going to not like all of dogs in that breed. So spend time with a variety of breeds and breeders. Along with that, keep in mind there's always going to be divisions within breeds. So in general, all working type dogs are going to have a working line and a show line. In some breeds, it's quite exaggerated. So if you look at golden retrievers that are winning at confirmation shows, and you look at golden retrievers that are winning with field trials, there is such a difference in not only the way they look, but the way they act and their temperament and their drive and all of these qualities are so different. It's almost like they could be completely different breeds. So they call that a split. And the split between show dogs and working dogs within a breed is not that exaggerated in all breeds. But even when it's not that exaggerated, keep in mind there will always be subtypes. So for instance, with German short hair pointers, you will see some show lines, you will see some field trial lines, you will see some NAVDA lines, you will see some meat dog lines, and there can be overlap within those. It's not like those are exclusive, but you can find all these little subtypes of GSPs that kind of have their own characteristics and their own generalized qualities. So I'm sure most of you listening to this podcast know this, but again, for people who are looking for their first hunting dog, especially, or their first sport dog, this goes for German Shepherds and Malinois, and I'm sure it goes for Border Collies and all sorts of herding breeds and everything else, that there's going to be these subtypes. And so again, if you want to do NAVDA, look for a dog that is proven in NAVDA. So that doesn't mean if you want a field trial dog that you can't buy a NAVDA dog. That's absolutely not what this means. But just keep in mind, there's going to be a difference between a dog that's been bred for generations and generations and generations to do field trials versus dogs that have been bred for generations and generations and generations to do NAVDA. There's obviously going to be a lot of overlap. They're still German short hair pointers. They're still hunting dogs. They're still performance dogs. But what you might see is that there's going to be some difference within those lines of variations on independence or variations on natural hunting range, variations in retrieving ability, variations for their love of water and swimming, variations in their body type, and so on. So again, doesn't mean you can't take a NAVDA type dog and run field trials with it. And that doesn't mean that if you buy a show dog that it won't hunt. That's absolutely not true. But think about it like this. If you have four kids, does it make more sense to buy a sedan or does it make more sense to buy an SUV that has three rows of seats? So You can certainly make that sedan work, but that big ass SUV would certainly make your life easier if you can take all your kids and your husband and one or wife in one trip versus multiple trips. But then again, you might have to spend more gas that way, or there's always going to be some downside to it too. So it's all about finding what works best for you personally and about how easy and set up for success you want your life to be. So I would start looking for a breeder by taking an honest look at what you want to do and find breeders that are doing that. That's the best place to start. So if I want to run field trials with a lab, I'm going to look for a breeder that's successfully running field trials. And again, I know that the majority of my clients are going to be looking for a companion or a meat dog or a companion hunting dog, but that doesn't mean that you should just look for any old dog and think that it's going to fulfill that purpose. So oftentimes I'll hear, well, I don't want a show dog, so I'm not going to buy from a fancy breeder. Or, well, I'm just a hunter, I don't need to buy a puppy from a hunt-tested litter. And then these people go and they buy some random puppy off Facebook and they end up with some nutbag with behavioral issues or a dog that's terrible to live with or it has health problems or it doesn't hunt the way they want it to or so on and so on and so on. So, of course, you'll have the outliers. You'll have the people who buy random puppies and end up with some absolute gem, but those cases are more rare than they are a regular occurrence. So even if you just want a companion and you don't want to do anything in particular with it, finding a dog that's proven in a variety of ways, meaning health testing, which we're going to get to, or proven to be a good hunting dog, or proven to excel at some sport like obedience, means that that dog is good. It can be around other people and dogs, it's trainable, and all these things that are good qualities even for just companions. What you don't want to do is just go buy some random dog that has no proof in what those puppies are going to be and hope for the best. That's the worst way you can buy a puppy. And especially when it comes to short hairs. And especially when it comes to hunting short hairs. I see a ton of breedings where the parents of the litter aren't titled but are hunting dogs. And you can't see that, but there are air quotes around hunting dogs. So in my opinion, and this varies, but in my personal opinion, there is absolutely nothing wrong with breeding a hunting dog without it being titled in some hunting venue if it's a proven hunting dog. But again, in my opinion, that really depends on what that hunting, that proven in a hunting situation is. So, you know, if you have some badass grouse dog that has great temperament and passed health testing but has never been hunt tested and you want to breed it, especially if it's a more rare breed, go for it. I think I'm all about that if it's been proven on grouse. But if you have some random GSP that you've killed a few pen-raised quail over at a preserve, and I really don't mean any offense by this, but to me that really doesn't count as being a proven hunting dog. Like, I could literally take my blue pit bull to a preserve, she'd flush up a few quail, and if I could shoot them over, I would consider that hunting, and that certainly doesn't justify me breeding her as a hunting dog, but she will absolutely go flush up quail. But again, I'm not going to count that as hunting experience, that's just prey drive. So when breeding reputably, we really want to improve the breed. That should be everyone's purpose that's breeding. Obviously, we aren't looking to not improve the breed, but if there's no real effort in looking at dogs objectively and being able to say, yes, this dog is a great representation of this breed, yes, this dog would definitely have something to add to the breeding bank, we've got to be able to look at it like that versus just saying, yeah, I can shoot some quail over this dog, so I should breed it. That, to me, is not a reputable breeding. So when it comes to hunting dogs, I personally feel like you either need to have some legitimate hunting experience, which proves an actual, real, wild bird or challenging hunting situations your dog can handle the work, or you're testing it, comparing it to a standard, and it's passing that standard, which also proves it's legitimate and can do the work. And that in my opinion, isn't a junior hunter title, but to each their own. Some people, that's all they want is to have a preserve dog, and that junior hunter title is enough to have a preserve dog. That's fine, but you'll really need to set yourself up to have a puppy that will hunt the way you want it to. And so keep that in mind, regardless of if that's comparing it to a testing standard or real life hunting experience. So, you know, if you buy a puppy from the best chukar hunting dog, wild chukar hunting dog in the country, that'll be an impressive puppy for sure. But if your goal is to hunt it in flooded timber for wood ducks, you might not be setting yourself up for success to have the best flooded timber wood duck dog coming from a wild chukar dog. So keep in mind, there's a lot of variation here, and it really depends on what your goals are. If you want a grouse dog, it might not be in your best interest to get some huge ranging field trial bred type dog, but you can certainly make that work if you do. All of this is kind of perspective. What that might mean is, if you have this big ranging field trial dog and you want to hunt the grouse woods with it, maybe you have to use your e-collar to reel it in a little bit more than you would have to if you had some close ranging lab or Spinoni or something like that. And if you're fine with that, go for it if that's what you really want. But if you buy this dog not knowing that you're going to have to do that, and then you're like, man, I don't even want to use an e-collar, then you're going to be kind of in for a surprise when your dog's 300 yards away and has busted up every grouse before you've even known what's happening, which might happen anyways. But I hope you understand my point here, is that you can really set yourself up for success if you want to by finding a dog that's going to closely replicate what you want to do. And for the people who are just looking for a pet, what that might mean is, if you're looking for a dog that you want to chill and sleep on your couch all day, you might not want to buy the field trial bred dog that has generations and generations of only kennel dogs in its pedigree that range 300 to 400 yards and are used to running all day every day. And again, that doesn't mean you can't not make it work, that's impossible to make that dog be what you want it to be, but it's going to take a lot of management, and it's certainly going to be a lot different than your 12-year-old lab who just passed away, who did nothing but lay on your couch. And you just have to be aware of that and realize what you're getting into and want to get into that. So back to our list and moving on. Next, we're going to talk about health testing. So health testing is particularly overlooked by people wanting a pet quality dog. But regardless of if you want a pet quality dog or some high-end performance dog, chances are you want your dog to be healthy and live a long, happy, healthy life. So it's going to be in your best interest to buy a dog from a litter where the parents have been health tested. And just to clarify, health testing does not mean that the owner of the mom and dad took it to the vet and the vet looked at it and goes, yep, looks fine, doesn't look sick. That is not health testing. Health testing is a predetermined set of tests that are based on the health concerns for specific breeds set by the National Breed Club. So if you go to OFA.org, you can select any breed, and it will tell you the required and the optional health testing for that breed set by the National Breed Club. So at the bare minimum, if you're looking at a specific breed, you should be looking for a litter where both the mom and dad, which are called the sire and the dam, have the required health tests. So your breeder, if you're interested in the litter, should be able to send you the registered name of the mom and dad, and you should be able to search those names at the website OFA.org, and it will pull those dogs up and tell you their health test results. And the website's actually super cool, and I could get lost on it for hours, because you can see relatives of the dogs. So you can see their parents and their offspring and their siblings, and you can just go down this whole rabbit hole of looking at health testing and the pedigree of the litter you're looking for. And what you're really looking for here is obviously passing results, and the OFA website will go into depth about each of the tests and the results and what they mean. But if you aren't trying to get super into this, the things you need to know is that if your dog does, if the mom or the dad of the litter does not show up on OFA, that's a red flag. And it's a red flag for one of two reasons. It either means the dog wasn't health tested, which is a red flag, or it means the dog was health tested and it didn't pass, so the results weren't published, which is obviously another red flag. And really, there's, in my opinion, there's no excuses for why a dog should be bred without health testing. Even though it's not completely indicative of whether or not the puppies are going to be healthy, you know, you could let your puppy run, even if the parents both have excellent hips, if you let your puppy run up and down stairs and don't feed it the right foods and drop it and let it jump out of a cart, it could develop hip dysplasia regardless of what mom and dad have. But at the same point in time, if mom and dad both have hip dysplasia, that is a puppy you should not buy, and those dogs should not be bred. So it's very black and white to me that health testing should be done to at least rule out, well, we shouldn't breed this dog. So each breed is going to kind of have their own set of requirements, but some general things that are kind of across all breeds are going to be hips and elbows to check for dysplasia, like I just talked about. Keep in mind those x-rays to determine whether or not a dog has hip dysplasia are done at least 2 years old. So if you're looking at a litter and you're talking to a breeder where the mom or the dad is under 2 years old, that's already a gigantic red flag. That is a run far and run fast kind of red flag, because that dog isn't old enough to have proper health testing, which is super unethical for a variety of reasons. Along with hips and elbows, which elbows are, the results are either they're normal, which is fine, or they're not, which means they're dysplastic or going to be dysplastic. Hips are kind of graded on a scale. So the OFA hips are graded as dysplastic, fair, good, excellent. And really you're looking for good or excellent, or something that would be even better would be to have a pin hip result, which gives you a numerical value, which you need to compare against the breed standard. I personally like the numerical result because I think that's much more conclusive than an opinion based on x-rays. But the good thing you need to know is whether or not they're dysplastic. Beyond that, something that pretty much all dogs, in my opinion, should have done is a genetic panel. It can be as cheap as $100 to $150, and I just don't see why any dog would be bred without it. And so what we're looking for here is to see if a dog is affected by a trait or a carrier of a trait. And there's going to be a bunch. Like, I think I could be wrong here, but I'm just guessing. I think Embark's up to, like, you do the Embark test for $150 or something like that, and it tells you the genetic markers of the dog for like 250 diseases or maybe more. I'm not sure. I haven't done one in a while. And of those 250, there might be like, I think for the Labradors, there's like 20 or so that are breed relevant, meaning these particular ones are important to note for that breed. So what you want to look for is if it's a carrier, which means the dog is not affected by that genetic disease, but it could pass it on, or if it's affected. Obviously, if it's affected, we don't want to be breeding that dog because that means that we're going to be passing that on to the puppies. If it's a carrier, there's some difference of opinions on whether or not the dog should be bred. But if it's a carrier and it's bred to a dog that's clear, that means the puppies cannot have the disease, but they could be carriers, or they might be clear depending on, you know, if the dad's a carrier and the mom's not and you breed them together, you'll have some puppies that are carriers and some puppies that are clear. So for me, that doesn't bother me one bit, but we don't want to be breeding dogs that are carriers to carriers, and we don't want to be breeding dogs that are affected at all. So that should be very obvious that every single dog should have that because it's so affordable and it's so black and white on a lot of relevant breed-related genetic tests. A basic heart and eye test are also affordable, and I think those should be done pretty much across the board. Those can, I think, vary depending on dogs. Dogs that are prone to heart diseases probably need not a basic heart exam, but an echo, which is significantly more expensive. So you need to check with your breed to see whether it requires a basic heart exam or an echo. And then you'll have some other things like certain breeds that are prone to luxating patellas will show up. So those breeds should have luxating patella results on the OFA website. But in summary, when you're looking at a litter, make yourself familiar with the OFA requirements, search the sire and dam on OFA, and make sure that they're passing those health tests. Even if the breeder tells you they passed, do not take their word for it. I can't stress this enough. I see it happen all the time. Oh, well, yeah, they said their hips and elbows are good. And then you go on OFA and they've never even been tested, or all sorts of funny things can happen. But make sure you see the results for yourself, especially if you're going to be investing in a puppy. You want to have the best chances of that puppy living a long, happy, healthy life with you. Moving on to temperament. This one should be obvious, but what I really want to note here is that temperament shouldn't be the only quality we consider when choosing to breed a dog. So, as I mentioned in my previous episode about puppies, everything has a genetic component. And obviously, temperament's going to play a huge role in that. So even as pet owners, we want a dog that's going to be happy, friendly, and enjoyable. As sport dog owners, we want dogs with specific temperaments depending on the sport. So that could vary a lot depending on what sport we're doing. But everything from a dog's confidence to their ease of training, including, you know, how quickly they catch on to things, to how easily they are to potty and crate train, personality quirks, like even the way a dog lays down, all these things can be genetic or have a genetic component. So when we see a lot of good qualities in temperament, that can warrant breeding, but again, that shouldn't be the only determining factor. So if you have a happy, friendly, easy dog, that's super. And yeah, that warrants that dog to be bred if it's proven in other areas and health testing and all that. But what we don't want to do is buy a dog from a litter where we ask them, well, why are you breeding this dog? Well, because they're so friendly and sweet. There are so many friendly, sweet, happy dogs on this planet. And that is certainly not enough to warrant them being bred when there are so many other dogs that qualify to be bred so much more and can be more predictive of good qualities that we're looking for. So, of course, we need to be looking at how its temperament is, but how is it improving the breed? How is it performing? And did it pass all of its health testing? Also important. Conformation is something we want to observe and take note of. Conformation is a dog's structure. So like how it's put together, it's how it looks from a skeletal kind of standpoint. If you want a show dog, you obviously should know this, but that in particular is going to be extremely important. That's how they're judged on their conformation. So if you want to do showing, conformation is going to be very important to you. If you don't want to show, there are some conformation related issues that you should definitely be aware of, but just know for, in general, for performance dogs, and this will depend on who you're talking to, but if you're talking to me, I'm going to tell you that form will follow function. So meaning if you're looking at a litter where all the dogs in the litter's pedigree are performing well, have been titled, are hunting, you can have some confidence that their conformation is holding up. You don't have generations and generations of high-performing dogs with terrible conformation, or their bodies wouldn't hold up to mean that level of performance. But you should still, at the same point in time, compare those dogs to the breed standard and look for any abnormality. So you can just Google the breed standard for any breed. It'll show up, and it'll not only show you a picture, but talk about that in depth. Lots of resources to learn about this stuff online. But what we're looking for, if we're not looking for a show dog, is, you know, when you look up conformation online, it's going to tell you, well, the shoulder should be this angle degree by degree, and the feet should be placed here in relation to the hips and all these sort of things. But if you're not into showing, all of that's still great. But really what you need to know is that there's not any serious abnormalities. And by that, I don't mean like, you know, two heads, obviously. But what we're looking for is, does the dog lack angulation in their hind legs? And that's important because dogs with really straight hind legs are going to be more prone to CCL injuries, which in humans we call those ACL injuries or their ACL injuries. So dogs with super straight legs are more prone to ACL injuries, or dogs with really weak pasterns are going to be prone to carpal hyperextension. So anytime we have a notable conformation abnormality, like cow-hocked or pigeon-toed, it can certainly lead to joint issues or secondary injuries. So while we might not care that the shoulder isn't angled enough, we certainly don't want to have a dog with super extreme conformation issues, because even if we're just using that dog as a meat dog, over time that can lead to secondary injuries. So regardless of if you're showing or not, it's important to have a sound dog in order for a long, happy, healthy life. Next, let's talk about ethics. So ethics mean we've got the best interest of the dog, the breed, and the humans in mind. So ethical breeders practice good puppy raising, such as safe, clean environments, feeding good foods, appropriate weaning, socialization, proper health, such as vetting. A lot of ethical breeders will offer a written guarantee on health problems. They'll send puppies home at the appropriate age. They're going to be really invested in their clients. Ethical breeders are often members of a breed club or other organizations that are going to promote good breeding practices. And really, ethical breeders should be a resource for life. So a good breeder is going to get to know you and your lifestyle and what you want to do, and they're going to really match you up with a puppy that's going to be good for that. And they're going to answer any questions you have, and they should absolutely be willing to take that puppy back at any point in time, because they're going to be committed to keeping that puppy out of a shelter regardless of the situation, because that's ethics. So what an unethical breeder might look like is not following any of the above things that we've mentioned already on this podcast. Breeding for the wrong reason. So instead of breeding for bettering the breed, they might be breeding just for money. I hear this a lot. Why have I invested a lot of money in this dog's training, so I need to breed it in order to get my money back? Not an ethical reason for breeding. They might not care for the well-being of the dog, so putting their needs and desires for money over breeding a female that's too old or that shouldn't be bred for whatever reason. Non-ethical breeders typically don't care if a person's the right fit for a puppy or not. So, you know, selling a super active short hair to someone who lives in an apartment and doesn't have any intentions on taking that dog outside and wants a couch potato. So as far as ethics go, get to know your breeder, get to know more about them, their purpose, their ideas, how they're going to handle picking puppies and those kinds of things, and find someone that you really feel good about. That's important. A breeder should be someone that you want to have a relationship with for the life of the dog, maybe even beyond that. So don't pick someone that you're like, this person I don't feel good about knowing, or I'm going to be embarrassed saying I got my dog from them. Never a good thing. All right, so let's wrap this up with talking about some red flags to be on the lookout for. So when searching for breeders, here are some things that I would consider a red flag. Breeders who aren't breeding for a purpose. So again, summarizing that, if you're breeding for color as a purpose, or you're breeding for super short-faced French bulldog puppies, or you're just breeding because you really like your dog and you think everyone else will like it, that's not a purpose. All of that's a red flag. Breeders who breed outside of the breed standard, again, breeding fluffy French bulldogs, or breeding super big or super small, or dogs that don't fulfill their purpose, all of that's a red flag. Breeders who don't health test, or who have dogs that aren't showing up on OFA, even though they say they're health tested. Breeders that don't have proof that their dogs can fulfill their breed purpose or are excelling at some specific activity. So, you know, Labrador breeders who breed for service dogs or people that are really into agility, those dogs aren't going to be purpose bred for to fulfill their breed requirements, but they're still serving a purpose and being bred for a legitimate reason. Breeders who don't have puppy raising practice, such as the puppies aren't handled, the puppies aren't exposed to things, the puppies aren't socialized, you know, they're just kind of in a kennel and they're being raised by mom until they're ready to go home. That's a red flag. Any breeder who sends puppies home before 8 weeks old is definitely a red flag. Breeders who try to get you to buy more than one puppy, huge red flag. This to me is one of the biggest, most concerning things that I would stay away from. Breeders whose selling point is that the dogs are AKC registered, and we didn't talk about this, but that really means nothing. Being AKC registered is absolutely not related to quality by any means. You can have very poorly bred dogs that are AKC registered, and you can have very nice dogs that are not AKC registered. AKC registered has nothing to do with quality, so that should not be a selling point. If you want to compete, you obviously need your dog to be AKC registered, so in that sense it can be a selling point, but that shouldn't be the only selling point. Well, they're AKC registered. That doesn't mean they're full-blooded or whatever people say. That's not a legitimate reason to breed. That is a red flag. Breeders whose selling point is that they've got champion bloodlines. This is kind of a joke with working line people, but if you aren't familiar with it, champion bloodlines is what that really means. It's a bullshit excuse for, I personally haven't done anything with these dogs that I'm breeding, but someone else who put a lot more time and effort into things further back in the dog's pedigree did something with those dogs, and those dogs did something. That is just a really big red flag that this person is using some, what's the word I'm looking for? Clickbait to get people to look into this litter. But champion bloodlines is really not a selling point and is a red flag. Breeders who can't explain why they matched a sire and dam. So when you're calling and talking to this breeder and you're like, okay, why did you pair this mom and dad together? Any good breeder is going to have a really good solid understanding of genetics and phenotypes and genotypes and reasons to be pairing things. A red flag to me is when someone goes, well, I have a male GSP and I have a female GSP, so obviously I'm going to breed them together. Well, no, not obviously. What are those dogs bringing to the gene pool, and how are they going to match up together? What are their pedigrees like? How are they going to complement each other? If a breeder can't answer those things, that's definitely a red flag. So if you find a reputable breeder that checks off all these boxes of everything we've covered, and not the red flag boxes, but if you find a breeder that meets all of your requirements, be prepared to be on a wait list. You have to be prepared for that. That's part of the puppy buying process. You know, you should never buy a puppy on a whim. Definitely don't impulse buy for a puppy, because that doesn't give you time to really think things through. And of course, if you go see a puppy that's available, you're going to go buy it. But really plan things out. Be prepared to be on a wait list. And don't switch breeders just because there's a wait list. That will never pay off for you. Put the time in to do your research and wait for your perfect little puppy. When you finally find a breeder that you really like, let them help you choose a litter and puppy. So if you have this breeder who has all this experience, if you like them enough to buy a puppy from them, you've got to trust them. So trust that they're going to match you with the right litter and puppy. If you are concerned that they're not going to match you with the right litter and puppy, that's your red flag that they're not the right breeder for you. So have that breeder that you trust help you choose a litter and puppy that's going to be good for you, because they're going to be the one that knows that puppy best. They're going to spend the most time with it. So they're going to be able to tell you which puppy is going to be the most likely to fulfill your goals as what you want out of the adult. So once you have your breeder and your litter picked out, don't get hung up on, well, I want this color, or I want that color, or I want this puppy because it ran over to my lap. I wouldn't get hung up on any of that. I would let the breeder match you to a puppy. Maybe if you want to decide sex, that's fine. Like, I understand some people need a female or male, or want a female or male. But beyond that, let the breeder pick out the puppy based on characteristics, not just color or this one wanted to hang out with me. So finally, anytime you feel like the breeder you've chosen no longer represents what you're looking for, don't be afraid to walk away. And I understand sometimes we had to put deposits down, and I've been there. I've put deposits down on multiple puppies and gone, all right, this is no longer a fit for me. And I would rather spend the couple hundred bucks on a deposit and not get that money back than end up with a puppy that I don't want and that's not going to be a good fit for me, that I'm either stuck with or that I have to try and rehome. That's going to be, you know, a huge stress or a burden. It's worth the couple hundred bucks to walk away if you come to realize it's not the perfect fit for you. There are so many breeders, so many litters, so many puppies out there. There's no reason to pick one that you don't feel is 110% right. And that goes for whether you're looking for your next serious sport prospect or really just a family companion. Buying from a reputable breeder is the best thing you can do to set yourself up to have a dog that you're going to love and enjoy for a lifetime. So, you know, buying a puppy is a huge commitment, and you've got to find something that you feel good about for the next 10 to 15 years. So really, don't impulsive buy. Don't rush it. Do your research, find a reputable breeder, and be content for waiting for the puppy of your dreams. So I hope that's helpful. If anyone needs any extra help or has any questions, feel free to reach out. If you want help looking for a breeder, I have a puppy matchmaking service that I'd be happy to help with. So definitely reach out, and good luck finding the puppy of your dreams.